ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरये। We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, text number 35. This chapter is entitled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. Yadatra kriyate karma.
Yadatra kriyate karma.
Yadatra kriyate karma.
Yadatra kriyate karma.
Bhagavat paritoshanam.
Bhagavat paritoshanam.
Bhagavat paritoshanam.
Bhagavat paritoshanam.
Jnanam yathat adhinam hi.
Jnanam yathat adhinam hi.
Bhakti yoga samanvitam.
Bhakti yoga samanvitam.
Bhakti yoga samanvitam.
Bhakti yoga samanvitam.
Yadatra kriyate karma.
Yadatra kriyate karma.
Bhagavat paritoshanam.
Bhagavat paritoshanam.
Jnanam yatad adhinam hi. Bhakti yoga samanvitam. Thank you. Word for word. Yat.
Yat.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Atra.
Atra.
In this life or world.
In this life or world.
Kriyate.
Kriyate.
Does perform.
Does perform.
Karma.
Karma.
Work.
Work.
Bhagavat.
Bhagavat.
Unto the personality of Godhead.
Unto the personality of Godhead.
Paritoshanam.
Paritoshanam.
Satisfaction of. Jnanam,
knowledge.
Yattat,
what is so called.
Adhinam,
dependent.
He, certainly. Bhakti yoga, devotional. Samanvitam, dovetailed with bhakti yoga. Translation, whatever work is done here in this life for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord is called bhakti yoga, or devotional loving service to the Lord. And what is called knowledge becomes a concomitant factor. Please repeat, whatever work is done here in this life,
whatever work is done here in this life,
for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord,
is called bhakti yoga,
or transcendental loving service to the Lord.
And what is called knowledge
becomes a concomitant factor.
Purport
by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The general and popular notion is that by discharging fruit of work in terms of the direction of the scriptures, one becomes perfectly able to acquire transcendental knowledge for spiritual realization. Bhakti yoga is considered by some to be another form of karma, but factually, bhakti yoga is above both karma and jnana. Bhakti yoga is independent of jnana and karma. On the other hand, jnana and karma are dependent on bhakti yoga. This kriya yoga or karma yoga, as recommended by Sri Narada to Vyas, is specifically recommended because the principle is to satisfy the Lord. The Lord does not want His sons, the living beings, to suffer the threefold miseries of life. He desires that all of them come back to Him and live with Him. But going back to Godhead means that one must purify himself from material infections. When work is performed, therefore, to satisfy the Lord, the performer becomes gradually purified from the material affection. This purification means attainment of spiritual knowledge. Therefore, knowledge is dependent on karma or work done on behalf of the Lord. Other knowledge, being devoid of bhakti yoga or satisfaction of the Lord, cannot lead one back to the kingdom of God, which means that it cannot even offer salvation, as already explained in connection with the stanzas Naishkarmyam Apyachuta Bhava Virjitam. The conclusion is that a devotee engaged in the unalloyed service of the Lord, specifically in hearing and chanting of his transcendental glories, becomes simultaneously spiritually enlightened by the divine grace, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita.
Yadatra kriyate karma bhagavat paritoshanam jnanam yataradinam hi bhakti yoga samanvitam bhakti yoga samanvitam bhakti yoga samanvitam.
Whatever work is done here in this life for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord is called bhakti yoga, or transcendental loving service to the Lord, and what is called knowledge becomes a concomitant factor. Interesting word in here, atra, it's, pointing to this world, this life. Another word that's commonly used, iha, as in iha yasya hareya dasye karmana manasa gira nikila apyavastastu jivan mukta sa uchite, that even as one lives iha, in this world or this body, if one is engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, hari hari, then the person is called a jivan mukta, it's liberated, even though in a material body. In fact, when one seriously takes to devotional service, the shastras say that such a person no longer has prarabdha karma, which means the fully manifest form of karma that we see before us in the mirror, in the form of the body that we've received as a result of our past consciousness, which is a result of our past activities and associations. And therefore, the Bhagavatam says, oh, Devahuti, aho bhatashva pachato garyanya jiva grevartate namatubhyam te pustapaste juhuvo sasna arya ramanachur namagranantiyete. Oh, how wonderful it is that a person who has taken to the process of chanting Hare Krishna, even a little bit, even just once, becomes liberated. And such a person is known to be, to have already performed Vedic ritualistic sacrifices, has gone to places of pilgrimage and taken sacred bath, has performed all kinds of sacrifices, studied Vedic literature, and so on, and is also qualified to take up the process of brahminical priesthood, because such a person's body, or prarabdha, is known to have been transformed. Therefore, the shastras all proclaim this. Rupa Goswami says, yad brahma sakshat kriti nishyapi vinashama yati vinana bhogai apaiti nama spurinina tate prarabdha karmini viroti vedaha. Viroti vedaha means all the Vedas say, Rupa Goswami is mentioning this in his Namashtakam, that if you chant Hare Krishna and you're able, through your sincere chanting, to perceive the Lord within his name, then even your prarabdha karma becomes purified, transformed from being a result of your material activities in the past to being something which is called in the Chaitanya Charitamrita your body, which is that of a sadaka deha. You no longer have a material body, but you have a sadaka deha. And this is what Rupa Goswami says is proclaimed in all the Vedas. By contact with the holy name of the Lord, one's completely transformed. And any activity that is engaged in the service of the Lord on a fundamental level transforms the performer, the thing that's being used to perform the activity, and the thing that's being acted upon. As Bhagavad Gita, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Brahmarpanam brahmahaviram brahmagnau brahmanohutam brahmaiva tena gantavya brahmakarma samadhina, which means, within this context, Krishna is giving that someone's performing a Vedic sacrifice. You have a special spoon that you use to put the ghee in the fire. And then, of course, there's the fire and all the paraphernalia around it, and the person performing the sacrifice. In this case, the spoon becomes Brahman. Even though it's a wooden spoon, it becomes Brahman. And the person that's performing the sacrifice becomes Brahman. Spiritual. Even though it's a material body sitting there made of bones, bones and other stuff. And the fire, the paraphernalia, everything's transformed. Brahmarpanam brahmahavira brahmagnau brahmahutam brahmaiva tena gantatyam brahmakarma samadhida. And Srila Prabhupada frequently used the example of an iron rod when it's placed in fire. It's transformed, so the material elements are transformable. But when they're engaged in the service of the Lord, they're transformed into spirit, from matter to spirit. So therefore, yadatra kriyate karma, when one uses one's facilities, meaning body, money, energy, what else do you have? Home, car, Cadillac. We drove in a Cadillac yesterday. Yadatra, whatever. Yat means whatever. Whatever you may have. It doesn't matter what you have because everything originates from the Lord and therefore ultimately it's spiritual. It's become separated from the Lord by consciousness. What is the consciousness that transforms it into a material item? It's thinking that it's mine and it's for my sense gratification. And when I do this, I transform it into material, a material item. And the converse is true. As soon as my intention changes, and I'm using the same items, the same body, the same Cadillac, I use it for the mission of the Lord, as is Prabhupada's translation, as it's engaged in the mission of the Lord, then it becomes transformed back into spiritual energy. And so that's one of the main points of this verse, is those things that we have should be used in the service of the Lord. Because after all, they're His things anyway. Isavasyam idam sarvam, Shrisha Upanishad, yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena punjita magridha kasasuddhanam. Everything animate or inanimate within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. Think about that for a second. It's easy to say the verse, but actually if you think about the verse for a minute, you'll change your life. That's the amazing point. Ishavasyam idam sarvam. Sarvam means everything. There's not one thing that's not controlled and owned by the Lord. And therefore, one should accept only those things necessary for oneself. Still listening? Which are set aside as one's quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Everything's controlled and owned by the Lord. Everything belongs to Him. And the false claim that something belongs to me is the problem. I think that there's something that's separate from the Lord, and therefore I enter into the dark material existence. And whatever I touch becomes transformed into darkness. So the way of light is to transform everything back into spiritual knowledge by selfless service. If one serves selflessly and one's motive is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead with whatever one does and whatever possessions one has, then naturally those things will be transformed and one will feel satisfaction. Because if Krishna is satisfied, then you'll definitely be satisfied. Now here's the good news. I mean, there's a lot of good news, but this is not the first good news. It's just more good news. Is that, I think that's the first part is good news because it's not that hard. It's just a change in intention. When I change what I intend for all my things or for what I'm doing in my life, then my relationship with the world changes immediately, as if flipping a switch. This can happen in any second. We can change our intention. And pleasing the Lord is the goal. If one pleases the Lord, then one will naturally feel satisfied and everything will be aligned properly. In fact, if that becomes my intention to please the Lord, then the Lord becomes pleased right away just by seeing our intention. And then, even if we make mistakes in whatever we're offering and however we're offering it, the Lord will make up for it. So the good news is that the Lord's easy to please. It's, Prabhupada points out, in the Bhagavatam, it's very difficult to go to hell. It takes a lot of work. You really have to make a whole plan. You have to have a strategic plan how to go to hell. And it means that you have to develop an infrastructure, which takes a lot of work and money, and you have to maintain it. Like, I was just noticing the freeway on our way home from the airport, and I was telling Aruna Keshavi that at our house in California, where we live in a little house, I put in a driveway. I mean, we had a driveway before, but it was old. And so I invited some contractors to come and look and see how to change the driveway. So they looked at it for a day, and then they came back with a paper full of numbers on it, saying this is how much it will cost, this is what we have to do. So, you know, you got to do it. And I did it. I paid for it. And it was a complicated process. They had to tear out the old driveway. They had to bring in a big old truck. I actually have to put rebar down for the cement to lie in. And then they poured all the cement in there. And then he had to wait, couldn't walk on it for a little while. And afterwards, I was a little traumatized by the bill and also by all the work that it took. But then I was driving down the freeway and I was thinking, here's millions of driveways. I mean, what traumatized me on a tiny little driveway from a tiny little house. You can drive from California to New York City on what's just an endless driveway. And who thought of that? And who did it? It's ongoing too. There's over on Egerton Street or whatever it's called. Eglinton, my favorite street in Toronto. But devotees can't go there because no meat, fish, or Eglinton. And it takes a lot to build one driveway, what to speak of a million driveways in the form of one road, what to speak of millions of roads. I mean, that's a lot of work. To go where? To that big mall over there with the Hudsons. Everyone's parked over there, almost everybody in Toronto. And if you look inside there, there's all kinds of clothes, mostly clothes, that are manufactured by people in third world countries who are subjugated to hellish conditions of life. And most of the clothes get thrown away and sent back to the people who made them, but they charge more than they paid them to make the clothes. I mean, don't get me started. But the fact is, I'm just trying to give a short sketch of the difficulty of material civilization and life. Not that we're Luddites and we reject all material things, but tena tyaktena bhunjita, take which things are necessary for yourself, that are set aside, obviously. Don't push for so much more. Becomes a difficulty to maintain all this. When Hiranyakashipu was asking for benedictions from Lord Brahma, of course Lord Brahma granted it, because there's a kind of deal in the material world. When you do austerity, you're supposed to get paid for it. So he had to hand over some benedictions. But it's mentioned there that Hiranyakashipu shouldn't have asked for that stuff, because he couldn't maintain it. And you have to consider anything you ask for, consider, is it, can I maintain this? Whatever benediction I want from material nature, can I keep this? Will it sit well with me? Not so much. There's no real material benediction that will satisfy us in any way. And on and on and on, it's very difficult to maintain the standard of material sinful life. Very difficult. Ugra karma, it's called. But pleasing the Lord is very easy. In fact, there are various scenarios. One is that you may have the wrong intention when you approach the Lord, but externally, if you do it right, the Lord will accept it. An example of that is Putana. Putana was a witch, and plain and simple. I mean, there's no way around it. She was definitely a witch. And she was hired by Kamsa to come and kill Krishna, because that's what demons want to do, is kill Krishna so they can enjoy the world. And she came to Vraj in the form of a beautiful maiden. And when she came into the house of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, especially the men that were there, when they saw her, they were like, okay, come on in. And, but everyone else, because it's a village atmosphere, and because she looked like a nursemaid and a mother, and it was an open feeling there in the village of mothers coming in to see Krishna. They just let her in. But her whole idea internally was to kill Krishna. So when she came, she had smeared her breast with poison, deadly poison, to kill Krishna. So, as we all know, Krishna knew what was going on, because he knows the intention of everyone. He sees through all these things. And he took the breast, took the nipple in his mouth, he sucked out the poison, didn't kill him, because he's Krishna. And then he sucked out the milk, then he sucked out the life air of Putana, and she remanifested as this huge demoness, crashed to the ground, 8 mile long, a horrible form. And there was Krishna playing on her breast when everyone came to see what had hit the ground. And they took him down and purified him with dust from the cows and all kinds of cow products, chanted mantras to purify him, protect him again. And in the story, what stands out to many, especially Uddhava, who mentions in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Aho bhakiya astanakala kutam jikamsaya payad apyasadvi lebe gatim dat ruchitam tatonyam kamvadayalum sharanam brajema. He's saying, okay, look what happened here. Putana came to kill Krishna, and all he accepted was the external part, that she dressed like a mother. Even though her intention was to kill him, she had a bad intention. But then Krishna saw, okay, she approached as a mother, I'll take that part. So he said, kam vadaya lum sharanam rajina. Who would take shelter of anybody else but Krishna? Because he accepts the smallest good quality, even if he has to manufacture it practically, and he overlooks the bad quality. Brahma mentions this in his prayers to Lord Krishna in the Brahma Vimohana Lila, where he says, Krishna, you gave so much to Putana, do you have anything left for the residents of Vrindavan? You gave so much mercy to this witch. Is there anything left over? I mean, everyone noticed it. All the great devotees noticed it, Uddhava and Brahma. I was like, wow, Krishna, that's amazing what you did. And this is just because externally she dressed like a devotee and came, even though her intention was to kill Krishna. And then on the other hand, we have, if you do it wrong externally, but internally your intention was right, Krishna will accept that too. So there's a story of Vidura. Krishna suddenly came to Vidura's house, and he and his wife were so flustered at getting things ready for Krishna that they were trying to feed him, and they were handing him, peeling bananas, because that's what they had available to give him. Krishna had just walked away from the offer of Duryodhana for a big royal feast. He said, no thanks, I'm not really interested in eating at your house. But then when he came to Vidura's house, they were giving him the banana peels. Because you know, when a great personality comes to your house, you might get flustered and do the wrong thing. So they give him the banana peels, and he's like, thank you. He accepted. Even if you do it wrong externally, because your intention was there, Krishna will accept it. And this is something Prahlad Maharaj notices when he's offering his prayers. He's just a five-year-old boy. And all the demigods had just offered prayers to please Lord Nrsingadeva, and he wasn't pleased, apparently, at that time. At least he was still showing his anger. So Brahma and the others pushed Prahlad forward and said, "You try." He came for you. And Prahlad said, "They all are in the mode of goodness. I'm a demon. I come from a demon family. And they all know eloquent words in Sanskrit. What do I know? I'm just a kid." And then he said, "Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutapaya." He remembered Gajendra, the elephant. He's just an elephant. But because he had some sincere intention, he offered prayers to the Lord, and the Lord accepted it. Even though the sincere intention came out of a necessity that he was being dragged into the deep water to be drowned by the crocodile, still, Krishna accepted it. So Prahlad said, "Okay, if I'm just sincere and I try, then Krishna will accept it." Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutapaya. He said, "The king of the elephants pleased the Lord with sincerity." So he said, "I'll just try to be sincere." So the point is, it's very difficult to go to hell. You really have to work at it. You got to have a wardrobe. Usually the wardrobe costs more than you earn. I read about this years ago when I was looking at businesses and, you know, employments and all kinds of things. And people, to maintain their car, you have to pay a lot for the insurance on the car, what to speak of the monthly payment, and it depreciates as you're paying for it. When you drive off the lot, it's worth half as much as soon as you drive off. You sign the paper, drive off, that $40,000, that's, you can't get a car for $40,000. Okay, $80,000. It's $40,000 once you drive off the parking lot. Just because it's not worth as much. And then it depreciates after that. You have to pay for that. You have to pay for your apartment. You have to pay for phone, insurance. I once counted up recently 28 different kinds of insurance that you have if you want to be fully covered. And all these things, if you add it all up and then you look at your salary, and there's really nothing left. That's the material world. You're only paying just to stay in the game of doing that. So that's the material side. But on the other side, even if you don't have anything, if you're a little sincere, you try to please Krishna, and even if you do it wrong, then Krishna will accept it. And he will award the highest benefit even for the smallest offering that somebody gives. So it's a good idea to use one's things in Krishna's service because, number one, they belong to him anyway. And it just doesn't make sense to steal stuff from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And number two is it's pleasing. Everything gets transformed into transcendental energy when it's offered to the Lord. So this is the great opportunity that we have to engage everything in the service of the Lord. And especially, it's important, as Prabhupada put into his translation, to be engaged in the mission of the Lord, because that's the all-encompassing way in which to utilize one's things in Krishna's service, one's energy, one's focus, attention. The mission of the Lord's unlimitedly expansive. And there's a lot of people out there. Yesterday we drove down to a place where we were looking for people who spoke Arabic. So we had to hunt them down, which isn't hard these days because of Google. We can find out where they live. So we drove there in a Cadillac. And we got there and we went into the apartment building. And that's some far-flung places. I mean, who's going to actually go into a, you know, 12-story apartment building, down those dark hallways, knocking on doors to sell a book in Arabic? We were thinking about how miraculous that was, and think how many jobs it created along the way in the mission of the Lord. First of all, Prabhupada made the books painstakingly. That was a big job. And then you have to put them together. So he had a whole team to put the books together, which employed hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And then once the books are together, somebody had to translate it into Arabic. And again, the process starts again,
to translate it all. Then they have to be warehouse shipped, and we keep some of them here. Then devotees have to drive them out to these places and find people who speak Arabic. And then you have to go through the act of offering the book and telling them in their language what you're doing. So there's a lot that goes into that. But everything that went into that is transcendental. And the hard work that one puts in to do those things is pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if you don't do that, what else are you going to do? If you don't engage in that, then your time will fill up otherwise. Right? So this is a great boon to have a mission and to think more and more how to refine it and also to use more and more of one's resources in order to help expand it. And as we were coming back from that apartment building yesterday, I was thinking that, you know, it took a lot of endeavor to get out there. And then I was thinking, who else would have gone in there? I mean, how would these people have come in contact with Krishna conscious literature, which is one of the main aspects, at least one out of seven, of our overall purpose of ISKCON, if we hadn't have taken the endeavor to go in there, find out the place, how to get in, go up to the top floor. They definitely weren't expecting us. And you know, and we were thinking, what are we doing here in a musty hallway, knocking on doors and meeting people and explaining to them? Well, it's part of the mission of the Lord. So everyone can do that. And by doing it, you'll transform everything. Whatever you use, your consciousness will be transformed by thinking about how to do it. And as the purport says, the verse, whatever work is done here in this life for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord is called bhakti yoga, or transcendental loving service to the Lord, and what is called knowledge becomes a concomitant factor. And just one point about that section of the verse is when one performs devotional service, one who performs devotional service is not bereft of anything. This is Bhagavatam, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashivairagyam Jnanam Chayarahaitukam. When you do bhakti, then you naturally get knowledge and detachment from the world, says the Bhagavatam, Sutta Goswami. It comes naturally, along with everything else. Bhakti Stvayi Stirataya Bhagavan Yadi Syas. What's the second line? Bhakti Stvayi Stirataya Bhagavan Yadi Syas Daivena Palititivya Kishora Muti. Mukti Swayam Mukulitanjali Sevatesman Dharmarta Kama Gataya Gataya Pratikshaha. I blew part of that. But anyway, the verse says that if you engage in bhakti, then naturally liberation stands outside your door waiting to serve you. So many people want to be liberated, but if you perform bhakti, then liberation in the form of a goddess, she's standing outside your door saying, how can I serve you? Anything I can do for you? The bhakti yogis are actually not even interested in liberation. They're so absorbed in serving. But then, verse goes on to say, Prabodhananda Saraswati wrote this verse. It says, dharma artha kama gataya. Everything else you want, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, all these things are naturally available to the devotee who's not interested in them. So whatever one does to satisfy Krishna through the process of bhakti yoga, especially spreading the mission of the Lord, puts one in the most advantageous situation that one can be in this world, atra. So one should continue to dedicate one's life and resources to the mission of the Lord, and know that this is pleasing to Krishna. If one pleases Krishna, there's nothing else that one could want in this world. And that by performing bhakti, all other necessary things will come into one's life. And this is called faith. This is my last point, and we'll take reflections. Shraddha shabde bishwas kahi sura danishchoy krishne bhakti koile sarva karma krita hoy. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami says, faith, shraddha, means to understand this fact that if I do bhakti, try to please Krishna, then all other things are done. I don't have to plan for all kinds of other things because those things, karma, sarva karma krita hoy, all other activities, karmas, are fulfilled by this process of performing bhakti. Furthermore, all debts are paid. Bhagavatam devarshi bhutapna nirinam pitranam na kinkaro nayam rani charajan saravatmana ya sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam prihritakartam. If one surrenders to Mukunda, serves Krishna, then you don't owe anybody else. You don't have to separately pay off any debts to the devas, the rishis, the forefathers, other living entities. Everything else paid by bhakti. Convincing? These verses? So we'll take a few reflections. Anything that you heard in the verse or the monologue that you want to reflect on means that you heard something that stuck in your mind, whether it seems remarkable or not, just reflect it back. There's a comment from our online audience.
From Kapita Viridar. Still Maya of Supreme Godhead is too strong that when we fall into his entanglement of mind emotions, it can't be veined so easily.
That it can't be what?
Veined.
Veined. Can you say it again? Can you tell me what her intention was in saying that?
That Maya is so strong that when we fall into that entanglement with our mind,
oh,
it can't be easily
reversed. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I was just reading in the Bhagavatam about the sons of Daksha. First he had 10,000 sons, and then he had 1,000 after that. The reason he had a second set was, first set he wanted, there was a lot going on at the beginning of the universe to try to get things going, and Daksha was one of the progenitors. He had 10,000 sons for that purpose. He wanted to get them involved in fruitive activities. He wanted them to become grihasthas. So he sent them off for training. They were doing austerities. And they were thinking, we're getting ready to go into grihastha life, to perform karmakanda and so forth. And then Narada came and he said, you know, you're already exalted personalities and you're already doing austerities. You might as well renounce the world. And he convinced them by telling them one allegory, which has several points to it. One point that specifically stuck in my mind when he was giving the allegory, which is very abstract, but they were so intelligent they could understand what he was saying. But one was that the living entity enters a hole, and once entering the hole, doesn't come back out. So they understood that that meant that once you enter into the material world, which is like a hole, you go through that hole, then it's very difficult to come back out. And of course, on the positive side, it says once you enter that hole that takes you back into Vaikuntha, you don't come back either. But then I was thinking, you got to be careful before you enter holes, because you know you can look somewhere and you think like, should I go in or shouldn't I? And don't do it unless it's back to Godhead, because once you make that decision and you go in, it's really hard to come out. There's a lot of implications. The material world's rigged, you know that, right? It's rigged, and if you go down the wrong hole, you know you're kind of stuck there until you do your penance and austerity and wait. You got to wait your turn. I mean, even if you look at the great personalities like Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted a big kingdom. Once he saw Krishna, he said, no, I don't want anything, you know, Krishna. No, you take the whole thing. And gave him sovereignty. You know, you rule for so many years here in this world. So be careful, watch out, you might get what you're after. David Byrne wrote that in a song years ago. You be careful, you ask for something, you want something in the material world, analyze it carefully. Do you really want that? Because once you go down that hole and you say, you know, I'll take it, then you got to take it. And it's part of the purificatory process of the material world that there are consequences. The word consequence has the word sequence in it. There's a sequence that unfolds as soon as you decide, you know, I'll take that. There's a consequence. It comes, there's the sequence starts, and they go, uh-oh. No, you already pushed the button. You're going to get the sequence when it finishes. Like, I don't want it anymore. It's like too late. So Bhagavatam's saying, you know, be careful. It's a regulative principle not to fall down. Because once you do, then it's really hard to come back. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, your last point actually reminded me of the story of King Nriga. You know, how he made a small mistake, and like you were saying, he just got stuck. And he even had that option, like Yamaraj indirectly gave him that, you want to take the benefit of your pious credits first, which will last forever, or you want to rectify for a mistake. He chose the wrong one, and then he went down the hole. So your point.
The reason he chose that first I'll take the sinful reactions. First he was thinking, like, how many bad reactions can I have? I'm the most pious king who ever lived. And second of all, it was one of those things like, you know, I'll finish, you know, the vegetables because I got ice cream waiting. And so, you know, it's like, let me get that out of the way so I can enjoy unlimitedly. That's the idea in the material world. Everyone, Prabhupada mentions this. It's so astute, you know, Prabhupada's saying, everyone's actually working hard because they're thinking, I'll get to a point where I'll have enough so I won't have to work and I'll just live kind of like a king, free. But it never happens. In America, because Americans are so against taking care of people through insurance and stuff like that, medical insurance, it's a big issue in America because, like, why should people be taken care of? Go figure. But anyway, you know, what happens is people work very hard to amass wealth, and when they're no longer able to work and they can't pay their insurance premiums, they can get government insurance, but first they have to run out of money. So Satyadev Prabhu, who knows a lot about the world of healthcare, he was saying, so many people, they work very hard and they amass wealth, but then they get sick, chronically sick, they can't work anymore, and they have to spend all their money to get well or to try to fend off the disease, and they give up everything just trying to save themselves before the government insurance kicks in. So point is that very difficult situation to maintain oneself in the material world. Yes, Prabhu. Here comes the mic.
Hi, thank you very much. You know, I'm glad that the Tori online asked that question, because a similar thing was in my mind. And kind of up until she asked that question, there was this doubt, like, you're giving this message about Bhakti Yoga, it's so easy. But I've heard this message before, and somehow something's not lining up, because my experience of it is actually, it's extremely difficult and challenging. And so then, after that question and the way you responded, I was able to appreciate that your perspective describing Bhakti Yoga is coming straight from the Bhagavatam, and so you're describing Bhakti Yoga in its pure state. It's very easy, it's the nature of the soul. But for me, performing mixed devotional service, practically 95% of my endeavor is sucked up by the material aspect, you know, going to my material endeavor. So that's where all of the difficulty is coming from, is because I'm still in this in-between state. So, you know, practically the vast majority of what I'm doing is being wasted on trying to maintain myself materially, which you also mentioned is a great
Yeah, well, I painted a kind of a bleak picture, I admit it. But at the same time, Bhagavatam's not impractical, nor is it uncaring, because it's Krishna. And as I said yesterday, Krishna recognizes what we're going through. And he also knows all the psychological states that we go through in the material world, including the interim period, when we're sincere and we decide we want to take to devotional service, but we're not quite there yet. And we get caught in this no man's land in the middle. So a couple things about that. One thing is, Bhagavatam says that there's only two people, two categories of people who actually enjoy. One is the fool, who doesn't know any better, goes to the game, tailgates, you know, drinks beer, thinks working hard is really nice, whatever it is. And is in complete ignorance, and therefore ignorance is bliss. It's not real enjoyment, but there's some sense of like, hey, it's Christmas again. And then the only other person is the Paramahamsa, who's completely transcended the material world. The vast majority of people in the middle have to suffer, because you know better. Once you know better, you can't just ignore the fact that your goal in life is spiritual, but you're not quite there yet. It's very difficult. So Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavatam, the 11th canto. He says, Jata Shraddha Makatasu Nirvina Sarvakarmasu Veda Dukat Makankamam Prityage Panishvara Tato Bajeta Mam Prita Shraddha Lurjita Nishchaya Jushamanam Shtatankamams Dukodarkams Jagaryan. This is good advice. Krishna says, first of all, he describes the situation of psychological state of a person who's in the middle. So he says, jata shraddha. Jata means ja. It's born, it's awakened. What is faith in matkatasu, and hearing about me? You know that this is what's really the progressive path in life, is to hear about Krishna. It means to perform bhakti yoga, starting with shravanam kirtanam. And one also knows that all fruitive activities lead to misery. He's very clear about that. He's also disgusted with material life and thinking, you know, how did I get in this in the first place? I wish I never came here. Sorry, Krishna, that I did this. But prityagi pyanishvara means, like, Ishvara means the controller, right? Ishvara Paramakrishna. But it also means the power to do something. So prityage means to give something up. So he doesn't yet have the power to give up the material world, even though he knows better. That's what the verse means. So then Krishna gives his advice. He goes on to say, know that the results will be there. Just continue and be happy. Don't become morbidly morose and psych yourself out and stop doing devotional service, really is what he's saying. Don't give up, because the end is the end result will be there. Said you can have a little bit of gharyan, which is kind of an inspiration, which means that you feel a little bit of remorse, just enough to keep you moving, but don't psych yourself out and stop doing the process of bhakti yoga. There are a lot of things that are difficult when we're doing some discipline or trying to achieve something great. We'll find ourselves in an interim state where it seems like the end is so far away. When I was writing this book, Our Family Business, I mean, I did it kicking and screaming, admittedly. I knew I wanted to write a book, but I didn't want to do the hard work of actually writing it. So what I did instead is I wrote it in my mind several times, and my editor kept calling and said, how's the book? And I said, it's almost done. But then after a couple months, there was nothing in her computer, and you know, she'd call back, say, can I see something? It's like, well, it's mostly in my mind. When I actually looked at the blank page, I was like, what do I write? It's like all those ideas went running away. Or at least how to express them, it's a little more difficult on the page. As one famous author used to say, writing's not hard. You just sit in front of a blank piece of paper and bleed. In any case, finally, because my wife Nirakula and Keshav Bharti Maharaj, my best friend, ganged up on me and they said, you have to stop everything else and write the book. So finally I did, very reluctantly, because I like doing stuff.
and going places and being with people. So then I stopped doing anything except writing the book. And while I was in the middle of it, my experience was like being in the middle of an ocean. I had no idea when I was going to reach the shore. And all I could do then, because I already stopped doing everything else, was to keep paddling. I mean, I didn't even have a boat in this scenario. I was just with my hands, dog paddling. Because I was just trying to write and write and write and write. And I was saying, first of all, this is no good, what I'm writing. That's difficult. And the other part is, you know, it's so far away from being a book. But one paragraph at a time. And then, you know, paragraph turned into a page. And the page turned into five pages. And it's like, then refine it 15 times. Then you got yourself maybe a chapter. And then how many chapters are there? Well, we'll have to see. And that's just the beginning, but I had to stay in it. I had to just keep paddling. It's like, just don't look around. Just keep swimming. And when we're in the middle like this, a devotional service, first of all, you have to hear enough to understand that there is shore. The shore is there. And Chaitanya Charitamrita says this, beautiful verses. And then actually, this verse comes from Akrura also. He's quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when he's going to see Krishna, he's picking him up. And he was sent by Kamsa to pick him up. And he was thinking, like, this is terrible what I'm doing, but Krishna will understand because I'm his devotee. Even though I'm going to pick him up to bring him back to Kamsa, who wants to kill him, everybody knows what I'm doing, but Krishna knows my heart. And then he was thinking of how far away devotional service, the perfection is, but he was thinking that somehow or other, one will come to reach the shore if one goes on with the process of devotional service. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was very helpful and really nice. I was grateful because all, you know, this, the way you were describing this pastime with Putina, it helped me see like a new side of it, that although these saintly persons like Brahma and Uddhava are able to appreciate what a glorious thing is happening, because she's probably, you know, up there with the greatest demons of all time, and she's getting such a great benediction. So they're able to see that there's something wonderful happening, but from Putana's perspective, her life air is being sucked out, and so it's a very, you know, just, I can't imagine, you know, what death feels like. I don't have a recollection of that. But it's a very awful experience, and so that's the thing I can relate to, is that as I'm going through the process of sadhana bhakti being purified in the association of the holy name and so on, there's a lot of pain and difficulty there. But then to understand and appreciate that bhakti in its nature is actually very easy, so once I get to the other side of it, it'll be a great relief.
Yeah, there's an old saying, you can do this the easy way or the hard way. And Giri Raj Maharaj tells the story about when he was in Bombay, in Juhu. He was the temple president there for a long time. And then he had a lot of association with Prabhupada. And one of the things he oversaw was this young man was helping translate Prabhupada's books into Marathi. And he used to come there to consult with Prabhupada about the translation. And the young man's father would come along too. The young man's father revered Prabhupada. But he had some bad habits. One of them was smoking. So he had revealed that to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would ask him about it, and he wasn't giving it up. It's hard to give up things sometimes. So then, sheepishly, once when Prabhupada asked him how that was going, and he said, oh, you know, I need your special mercy. And Prabhupada said, yes. The special mercy can be arranged. He said special mercy means, from Krishna, that he'll take away everything and make you so miserable that you'll be forced to give it up. He said, so you can get the special mercy. He was like, no. I'll do it myself. I'll voluntarily do it. And so there is a voluntary way. Prabhupada says that you don't need adhikari to surrender. It's not that you actually have to be qualified to do it. Because in a morning walk conversation, one man was trying to make this argument to Prabhupada that you need to have adhikari to surrender. Prabhupada stopped him and he said, no, no. He said, Krishna says, sarvadharman parityaja mami kam sharanam vraja. This is open to anybody, at any time, in any condition, doesn't matter who you are. And then he gave the example of a poor man who's suffering because he has no prospect in life and no money. And then a rich man comes with a bag. What's in the bag? Money. Lots of it. And he says, here you go. Take the bag. No strings attached. Now, the poor man has a choice. Take the bag or don't take it. Two choices. And so if he takes it, then he becomes rich. And if he doesn't take it, then he can stay poor. And so Prabhupada said, we also have a choice. Krishna says, sarva dharman parityaja. You surrender to me, I'll deliver you. He said, don't even worry. You know, some guy comes in here from Toronto and sets up a table over in the corner and says, you know, anybody you line up, I'll take care of your affairs. Anybody have an affair, things that you need taken care of in your life? Yes. Just three people. There's a lot. I mean, it's like it never stops. The mind's going, what about this? What about that? What about this? Well, I fixed that. Yeah, but it's going to break again. And, you know, I mean, everything's going to go wrong. Just, you can count on it. So everyone's in a constant state of anxiety thinking, how am I going to fix all this stuff? So guy comes in, says, don't worry, I'll take care of everything for you. Brings out the briefcase, you know, the whole thing. But then you might think, who is this guy anyway? I mean, he's from Toronto. How good, you know, he's from the material world. How can he fix everything? But if Krishna says it, Prabhupada says, but if Krishna says, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has unlimited potency, and he knows everyone, he owns everything, he can actually fix it. So if he says it, then why wouldn't you take it? So you can do the easy route or the hard route. And the more that we surrender, the easier it gets, because there's no friction there. Once you give up your claim that I have a plan that's got to work, and if you give up your claim on your plan, say, my plan doesn't have to work, Krishna's plan has to work. That's the mission of the Lord. He has a mission. It's like, I don't care if my plan works. I care if Krishna's plan works. And you invest yourself in that. You might have some anxiety because Krishna's plan in the material world takes a little endeavor, but it's a different kind of anxiety. It's not the kind that eats away at you like cancer. It's the kind that gives you some, it actually makes you effulgent worrying about Krishna's plan. So that's why this is, you know, it's such a benefit to have a plan to worry about. Because if you just negate everything and walk away from it, it'll call you back. But if you engage yourself ambitiously in spreading Krishna's plan and figuring out what he wants and then doing that, and you see people who do that. I mean, they are around. You can look at them. And they're really engaged. And they're in a lot of anxiety too. But it's Krishna anxiety. It's really different. And it's the kind of austerity that takes one back to Godhead. So I'll just read the verse one last time and then we'll stop. This is Narada Muni speaking to Vyasa, and he says, whatever work is done here in this life for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord is called bhakti yoga, or transcendental loving service to the Lord, and what is called knowledge becomes a concomitant factor. Case closed. Go Premanande, Nitai Gaura Haribo. Hari Bol, hope you're ready. Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura, Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura, Hari Bol. Pretty close. We'll get it tomorrow. Vanchakalpa Vrisha Kripasan Vivacha Patitanam Pavanibyo Vaishnavibyo Marman Natari Armarman Natari Armarman Natari Armarman Hey Natari Armarman Natari Armarman Natari Armarman Natari Armarman.